Their health choice. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Friends of the Arts. A state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Chico Natural Foods, the co-op has recently added a hot food and salad bar open for lunch, breakfast, and dinner. Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, Chico's community-owned grocery store, has been providing local, organic, and sustainably produced food for more than 40 years. Have you seen the co-op lately? We're going to start tonight's show, It's Your Body, with a song. This is Leslie Gore, You Don't Own Me.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. I'd never stay. I don't tell you what to say. I don't tell you what to do. So just let me be myself. That's all I ask of you. I'm young and I love to be young.
That was Leslie Gore, You Don't Own Me, from her 1963 album, Leslie Gore Songs of Mixed Up Hearts. So in honor of Women's History Month, which is March, I have asked two amazing women to join me in the studio to speak to me about their lives, accomplishments, and the women who inspired and enabled them to grow and prosper. I'm also going to be playing some more empowering songs by amazing female musicians. And just a little tidbit about Leslie Gore. She was an amazing artist, and she produced music from the 60s all the way until her death, and she came out in the 80s, actually. So her song is even more meaningful to us today. So ladies, I'm here with Alicia and Rocky. Would you like to tell me more about yourselves?
My name is Rocky Cruz. I always like to say the rock is cruising. I am the assistant executive director / program director for Rape Crisis Intervention and Prevention, which is the only rape crisis center that takes care of the communities of Butte Glen and Tehama County.
And I am Alicia Trider. I am the faculty advisor for social science and multicultural and gender studies at Chico State, as well as an associate faculty at Butte College in the multicultural and gender studies department, as well as the faculty advisor and founder of the Butte Feminist Union.
Very excited about that. I just went to Vagina Monologues last month. It was super exciting.
Thank you.
So, in honor of Women's History Month, we want to talk about our identity as women and our feminism. It's central to our identities. So either of you want to jump in and just kind of tell us your story, start at any point.
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in New Hampshire, and I went to school in D.C. at George Washington University. I got my B.A. in Chinese language and literature. I didn't realize that I was a feminist until high school. Go back a little bit. I took a women's history class in high school. It was a very progressive high school at the time because that was in the 90s. And really opened my eyes to women's issues in the community. We made a quilt for our local rape crisis center in my hometown and auctioned it off. My mom actually ended up winning that, but we donated the proceeds to our local rape crisis. And that was the first time that I felt a community of people working together, sort of collective activism, could make a difference in our community. Mm-hmm. And I owe that to my high school teacher, Miss Barassa, whom I still love many years later. And then I went on to D.C. to college, where I had a really hard time adjusting and didn't feel like I was at home until I found the Feminist Majority Leadership Alliance, which is the college chapter of the Feminist Majority Foundation in D.C., and really, really fell in love with that program and the people that were in it. And they helped me find my place, both in D.C. and at GW. From there, I graduated and moved to China and lived there for a few years, had a great experience working and living there. Then fast forward a little bit, I fell in love with my soon-to-be feminist husband, and we moved to Chico in 2008. And, we supported each other going back to school, which is why we moved back to Chico, or why he moved back to Chico and brought me with him. And we both got degrees at Chico State. And now we both work in the community and have a son and are looking forward to more, as we were talking about before, feminist organizing in the community and adding to the community in that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about all these collaborations we're coming up
with. Right, me too.
How about you, Rocky? About your life, the first one.
The first one. I'm so excited. I have to have direction. I get lost here. So, okay. So, I always like to tell people, because people always want to know where you're born, and they go, are you an American? I go, no, actually, I'm a Territorian, because I was born in Alaska before it was admitted into the Union, so I don't have to take any credit for anything else other than I'm a Territorian. And so as far as, I was born into a family of domestic violence, intergenerational incest, and addiction. And so, that was my norm. That is what I thought, happened to everyone. I had nothing else to judge it by. So by the time I was 13, I decided, okay, I'm going to leave home. So I ran away from home because it was safer in the streets than it was in the home. And so I stayed there, until I was about 24, 25, and had seen too much murder, too much death, too much just living in the streets, and knew that I wanted something different, but didn't know how to do that. So when I first tried to, because I always knew my story, it wasn't like I didn't know, because there was no covert things happening. It was very blatant, and it was all family members, all genders. And so, for me, when I tried to reach out for help, there were no rape crisis centers. There were no domestic violence shelters. And there was no place to turn. And so, trying to just figure out what to do. And somebody said, oh, you should go to a psychiatrist because they can fix you. And I'm like, what's a psychiatrist? But okay, made an appointment. And I remember he had said, well, your problem is that you have to have sex with everyone. And I said, well, I already know that. So tell me something I don't know. So then it ended up being that he says, well, you need extensive therapy, and we'll be working with you 4 or 5 times a week. And I said, he says, about 2 to 6 hours every time you come. And I'm like, whoa, this stuff really works. So what do you do? Because I wanted to know. And the therapy then was, as he said to me, he says, we'll be having sex. And as I started going through more and more, that apparently was what they did. They called it something. I don't know what they called it. I've talked to psychiatrists and psychologists since then. They go, oh, yeah, that was a really dark error in therapy.
Wow.
So, you know, I thought, you're crazier than me. So I left, and I thought, well, if I got to do something, I got to do it on my own. So that's when I came up with my first Rockyism. Mm. And that's first the test, then the lesson. And that's how I taught myself to move from a victim to a survivor to a thriver.
I've got chills. Wow. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
And that's very, it's important to bring up that dark history, because I study psychology, and it's just something we don't talk about. I have never heard that. In our recent history, we talk about the things in the 1800s, but that is more recent.
Oh, yeah. That was like probably late 70s.
Wow. Oh, that floors me. All right. So going back to when you were young or in your formative years as an adolescent, who really shaped you and was your role model? Alicia or Rocky, whoever wants to jump in.
Sure. Okay. I'll jump in. Okay. We'll both get an equal airtime. It's okay.
I love it. I like sharing with you.
Me too. You're great. Well, for me, it started off when I was a kid. I came from a big group and a long line of strong women. Mm-hmm. I was surrounded by strong women, but I didn't maybe realize it until I got older and saw what the opposite could be. But so I always looked up to, you know, my mom, who had faced adversity as a teenage mom, bringing me into the world, who faced adversity, to, you know, my very strong grandmother and all of my strong, independent cousins, and never saw it as a negative that they were strong and independent and weren't settling and had great careers. And it wasn't until I got older that I saw people's negative reactions to that, that, well, why didn't they settle down? Why didn't they have kids? And in my mind, I always thought, well, I want to be like them, though, because they're such strong, amazing women. So I didn't see their lives as anything negative, and I still don't. I still think that they're amazing, amazing, strong women. So I had a great group of women to look up to growing up.
How about you, Rocky?
Wow, this was like a total trick question for me, because I was like, you know, if I could... My world, there was no role models. The role model was that of violence. So that was all the men, women, children, anyone knew, was how to live in violence. And so, you know, I knew that that wasn't what I wanted. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it wasn't healthy. But that I never found that. And then being a child of intergenerational incest, which I think is really true for a lot of people, is that, you know, your boundaries are already mixed. You know, I have this thing where I teach people, and I have this chair at work that I spin around, which I love. It's my free high. And so, you know, I take my finger and I stretch it out, and I go, you know, from my chest to my fingertips, and then I spin around 360 degrees, and I go, that's my personal boundary space. And I says, unfortunately for incest survivors, because they're sexualized at such a young age and their boundaries are just broken, that they never know where they end and somebody else begins. So that just leads you to more things happening. So it would happen with teachers, and it would happen with doctors, and you name a profession, and I can tell you an incident that happened to me. So it was just that you're more, it's like, well, this is just my life, you know. So the role model part, it was just what it did teach me, is it taught me another Rockyism, another lesson, and that was violence, whether it's physical, emotional, sexual, it's stronger than any drug known to man. It's more powerful than a magnet, because even when people try to turn it the reverse, they keep being drawn to it. So I knew that somehow I had to find a way to demagnetize it.
You are your own role model.
And that's
you're
me.
You're my role model.
Aww.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. So as your identity as a feminist going through these things, how did it shape your behaviors in your life?
Let me look at my answer here. So, you know, when we talked about this earlier, it kind of brought me back. You know, I got to get in the time machine and, you know, go back. And so it reminded when I first started a rape crisis. And so the director at the time and the person that was the head of counseling, they had asked, he said, so what does feminism mean to you? And I remember sitting there thinking, what does feminism mean to me? And they were like, yes. And I go, and I just kept saying, they go, yes. What is, and I said, well, I never heard that word before. And they said, well, do you know what it is? And I go, well, in just saying it, I think what that means is it's equality for all. And I remember them telling me that that wasn't really the meaning of it. And I said, well, I think it should be, because it just took me back to where I was, where I saw there was not only disparity in my home and there was power and control, but even when you get in the streets, there's power and control. It doesn't matter where you are, in jobs, in school, there's just always this disparity. So for me, maybe because of the path I got to walk, it was that both men and women, boys and girls, everyone needs to have the same. And it needs to be about empowering people and, you know, creating this perfect soul within instead of destroying it. Mm. So that would be my how I started doing the thing.
Feminism.
Yeah. Feminism.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Alicia?
Once I realized what feminism was, like what you were saying, Rocky, didn't always know what it was. I figured that out in high school when I told you I took that class and did some activism for the first time. But prior to that, I always had those beliefs. I just didn't have a name for them. I always felt strong as a girl and then as mm-hmm. a woman and didn't feel like I couldn't do something because I was a girl or a young woman. But I also feel like it has shaped the choices I've made for myself personally and professionally. It's shaped my relationships, what I will put up with and what I won't put up with. It helped lead me to my feminist husband. Shout out to Ryan out there. I love you very much. And to Juno, our baby. And it shaped my parenting and who I am as a parent. As we were talking about before, the importance of teaching consent to children from conception. To, you know, talk about that with your partner and have a plan that how you're going to talk about that with the baby once, you know, it's born mm-hmm. and you start having conversations with it. We also include diverse stories and books and faces and backgrounds. We're not afraid to explain hard topics to him. Everything from his birth, because I chose a home birth, mm-hmm. and everyone told me that, wow, you're really courageous. And that felt, I know. And I just thought to myself, well, at one time, everyone was born at home, you know? I mean, it's only recently that we started doing this in the hospital.
Birth is courageous, though.
Oh, yes, I totally agree. I totally agree, yeah. And then also, just in choosing his clothes, I feel like every time I go to the store, it's a real feminist decision not to buy him the very aggressive boys' clothing, you know? It's become somewhat of an art to find gender-neutral clothing for him. And then it's also shaped my career and the choices I've made and the positions that I want and the education that I've attained, the work that I'm doing, and soon to be the volunteer work that I'll be doing, hopefully with Rocky, yes. at Rape Crisis Center. So, but I also feel like feminism, I'm not done with feminism. And as it evolves, I'm hoping that I evolve as a better feminist. Mm-hmm. Just want to throw that out there.
Well, I know I'm not interviewing myself, but feminism has shaped me. It's given me this space and this feeling of empowerment that I never had as a young girl. And that I'm owning my life. I'm owning my relationships and just the interactions. I feel like, to me, it means equality for all. And it means being a better, kinder person. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's just given me that avenue. It's mm-hmm. awesome.
Well, and I love that there's different ideas of what feminism can mm-hmm. be. It'll be different for you and for you and for me. The basic core of it will probably be the same, but we'll interpret it different ways in our own lives.
Mm-hmm. So, can you remember a specific moment in your life when you felt empowered as a woman and that you kind of had that aha moment of self-actualization, like, I am me and I am so full of power and nothing can stop me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You
want to
go ahead?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. You know, for me, and I want to thank you for your questions, Grace. They're incredible questions because mm-hmm. it's so
yes,
important to, we need direction on, because, you know, like you've heard that saying, like, you know, in the forest, you can't see the trees. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciated all these questions because it helped me to reflect on things that I didn't really put under a specific category. So I want to mm-hmm. thank you for that gift.
You're welcome.
So, you know, when I was looking at this question about when I realized that I had power as a woman, I realized it when I was getting out of the streets. That's when I realized it because I found that I had a voice. Mm-hmm. And I found in that moment, you know, and this is another Rockyism, of course, I found in that moment that healing and that empowerment that the greatest gift you give yourself is standing in your own truth. Mm-hmm. And that it can be a really lonely place. and that people first need to stop and be honest with themselves, like what do they feel and what do they think and what are they not okay with. And I found that the more I set those boundaries and I said specifically what I meant, people would say, well, yeah, I heard you say that, but I didn't think that's what you meant. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that kind of a thing where I realized that how powerful my voice was and how it could change things, good or bad, how it could change people's lives, how it could and how it continues to empower me. And every day I'm silenced in some way in doing this work. And I get really angry because I'm up against all these systems that kind of think, oh, rape crisis, we, you know, you don't really need a rape crisis. It's not really happening. Mm-hmm. And I when I'm quiet and I'm listening to this, I just say to myself, you know, Rocky, you are the voice for those women that haven't learned that they have a voice yet. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that if as long as I'm giving myself permission to be great, that I'm teaching others that they have the right to be great too, and that they have a voice that needs to be heard, and we need that to make all of us together.
Oh, thank you, Rocky. Thank you for sharing your story with us tonight, because it's really an amazing story.
Oh, thank you.
No, I really appreciate it. I feel really honored to be sitting here with you. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering why you asked me, because Rocky is so amazing. I mean,
you are amazing.
Oh,
can
well, thank you. You're
about
very sweet.
An empowering moment when saw your power. I was at Vagina Monologues.
Oh boy, here it comes.
I know this seems. Kind
I love
of,
this.
But some students were being a little rude, and these people were trying to speak, and they were giving the most beautiful performance, and they were like bearing their souls. And you stood up and you said, "Knock it off, no more." And the room went silent, and you could just feel your power emanating, and just, I mean, everyone appreciated it. That was rude. So I just, in that moment, I was like, wow, she's a force to be reckoned with. It was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, that was my mama bear phase, because those were all my cubs up there, you know, trying to talk about their vaginas and have this moment. And yeah, I had to take charge. It was not okay. And speaking of voice, I found that voice. I've been working on it for a long time, but I found that voice in high school, I feel like, in this, through education, through taking this women's history class and realizing that, oh yeah, women are almost more than half the story. You know, we're 51% of the population, and women do have stories to be told, and we have voices that want to be heard. And so that's when I really found my voice. And you can ask my parents that I really found my voice, and I had a lot to say after that, and they heard it all the time. But that was when I found my oral power. My physical power, though, I didn't realize I had until I had my son. Thought I was going to die and didn't. And by the way, you know, also brought this amazing human being into the world with my body.
Right.
I was blown away by that, and then was able to feed that human being with my body for the first few months. And it just blew me away too, because it's such a basic, it seems like such a basic biological thing that on a cellular level, my body knows how to do this. But I had to read all these books during pregnancy to figure out what was happening in my body. Mm-hmm. Like my brain didn't know what was happening, but my body did. It just knew instinctively how to do it. And that happens all the time. And that's the same way that all of us come into the world. And I just have to give a big shout out to mothers out there, because that I felt like such a badass. I felt like such an amazing, powerful, strong woman after that.
You were a badass.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It is so true. And you don't ever think about just the true empowerment and the owning of your womanhood when you have children. And I just want to thank my mom. I love you, Mom. You're amazing. She just had
shout
surgery, so
moms.
She's recovering.
Yes, shout out to moms.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So we've been kind of talking over the last few days through our discussions about how feminism is changing. What do you think that the paradigm shift, have you seen it in your lifetime? And do you think that it will change more what it means to be a woman and what feminism means as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, we'll go back and forth.
Okay.
Because I think we both have some great ideas. I feel like, you know, even just a few decades ago, there was a real strict definition of what it meant to be a woman. And if you didn't fit in those categories, there was something wrong with you. But now, you know, fast forward to 2016, I feel like there aren't those same parameters and boundaries. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do a certain thing to be considered a woman. You don't have to look a certain way or dress a certain way or identify a certain way to be a woman. Mm-hmm. So I think that those shackles, those boundaries aren't there as much as they were a few decades ago. That's one way I see a paradigm shift happening that I think is only going to get better for a lot of people that don't necessarily identify in the binary system of male and female, women and men.
Right. I know in this dysfunctional family that I grew up in, it was a lot of, there was a lot of politics. And so, and I saw how evil it was, and that it wasn't really about the people that were going to do the right thing. It was that, you know, they had already decided who was going to be in the position of power, and then they would use what I coined decoys. And so, you know, at some point they pulled their vote and they said, vote for my incumbent. And it was the person they wanted to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I always said I would never get into anything political. And then I just had this epiphany, like, oh my God, shouldn't have said that, because I didn't realize that I'm like in the most political thing that there is. Yes. And so I don't watch it. I don't really get into it, but I know that there's been a lot of buzz around me. And it's kind of like, you know, like currently, how do I want to say this? In our current political, like, I don't know what you call it, arena or whatever you want to call it, it's like for the first time in history, young people are turning out in record numbers. Mm-hmm. And that it's like all of a sudden they've realized, and I think what it is because they see that I have this power. Mm-hmm. I have this innate power, and that my power, I can use that and make change and do social justice, and I don't have to do the status quo. I don't have to go this way. Mm-hmm. I can say, no, wait. Just because it's a woman or just because it's this. No, wait, I believe it's because this is the issue that's more important. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, I feel really grateful every day I wake up. It's like, wow, it's a freebie. I got to wake up. So I'm alive to be able to see that people are finding their own voice, mm-hmm. and they're going, you know what? I can make a difference. And I'm seeing it all over the place. So for me, mm-hmm. that's the hugest thing for me mm-hmm. in my world, the shift that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I see that also, yeah, just to piggyback on that, more and more young people being taught the feminist beliefs, right? The feminist ideas of equality and inclusiveness, and that that's affecting what you're saying, that we're not having to unteach people these issues. Mm-hmm. They're starting from, you know, as young children, growing up in an atmosphere of equality and inclusiveness. So that's opening up doors that weren't open before, and those people are going to get into education. They're going to get into government. They're going to get into politics. They're going to get into public policy, et cetera, and they're going to make the changes from within because they these kinds of changes, you know, for women, the feminist changes, because we don't have to unteach them all of the things that maybe we grew up with,
right.
You know.
Right. Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. Like, we do a lot of training, and people come from a lot of different ways. You know, they want to be therapists or social workers or law enforcement, or maybe they want to be a really great mechanic. I mean, whatever it is that they want to be, right? And so I'm like, it doesn't matter because, you know, sexual violence is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so what I tell them is, I say, you know what? Once you go through this, you know, we always tell people when they come to Rape Crisis, it's like, once you walk through the doors of Rape Crisis, your life will be forever changed. But then you can make the change, because then you become our dominoes. Mm-hmm. And you can make that wherever you're at. And I'm so excited when I see people that are becoming LCSWs or presidents, or they're going back to school and getting their master's, or they want to change public health. Or and I may not do much Facebook stuff, but I'm like, go, Domino, go. go, Domino, go, because they've got to do that. And so I think that's I'm glad that you said that, because I didn't realize that. And so that's really important, you know, that we're giving people opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And you said it better than I did. Thank you for jumping in, that it is that domino effect. That's what I was trying to talk about. The discussion is moving away, because we're raising feminists from a younger generation. The discussion moves away from education, because we don't have to focus on that anymore. We can focus on the activism, the community involvement, the civic engagement, because people are already there. Like, and you talk to young people today and they're like, yeah, feminism, I get it. And I'm totally on board with that. Now what? You know what I mean? Like, they're ready for the next step.
So real life.
Real life, exactly.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah. I now have great faith about the future.
Good.
There's so much hope right now. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
We're not alone.
No, we're not. No. And children are going to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
Things are getting better every day.
I mean, we'll help, right?
Oh, hey.
Three of us are definitely going to help.
Got to keep this rock is rolling until the domino stops.
Yeah.
So how about a powerful woman in your life who just inspired you to become who you are today? This is your opportunity to give some shout outs to your fellow women?
And maybe cry in the process.
Yeah.
On a personal level, it's my mom. I love you, Mom. Ooh, excuse me. Like I said, who faced a real tough adversity when she became pregnant as a teenager and didn't get any support at home for that and was turned out from her home for getting pregnant, coming from a very conservative religious family. And so that was hard, but I thank her so much for having me and raising me and giving me great opportunities. And then professionally, I also had a great role model in my grandmother, who taught me the importance of higher education and civic engagement and community involvement, as we were talking about before. She gave me a lot of those opportunities. She's currently a state legislator in New Hampshire. And she was always encouraging me, whether I, you know, deserved it or not, to go out with her and to speak publicly on issues or to attend rallies or to attend, you know, special breakfasts and those type of things. And that really gave me such a great view of the world outside of my little circle of friends or, you know, my, outside of my home, and made me very aware of the world around me and how I could be a part of it, even as a young person. And I don't feel like a lot of people get that, you know, if they come from a maybe a more of a sheltered family or community. So I thank both of them very much, and I love both of them very much.
That's very powerful.
Thank you.
That's very powerful. I think more of us need to, those people that have had the experience of wonderful parents and loving homes, I want those people to shout that out, because there's so many of us that don't know what that is. And I've been with so many people, like they feel like they can't share that, that they're ashamed of it. And I'm like, no, your voice is so important, because people need to know that actually exists. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. That's so important. I know when you asked me this question, she says, you know, who's the most powerful woman that inspired you? I was like, oh, me. You know,
yes,
I was like,
yes.
Me, that's yes. It, man. I had to do it on my own. But, you know, I in my healing, you know, I've learned so much. And I realized that, you know, however dysfunctional my family was, that my parents parented all with the only tools that they had. Mm-hmm. They knew no different. And, you know, I was able to work through the anger and the rage and the forgiveness, and not of what they did, but because of what they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But I think about them, and I think that, you know, so my mama, her mother died when she was three, and her father, my grandfather, was a pedophile. Mm-hmm. And by the time she was 5 years old, he had already prostituting her out to the minors. And my father came from a home where there was a lot of, you know, downgrading women, abusing women. And I just learned after my father died that I was a person of color. I didn't know that, because I was raised, my parents raised me that, you know, this is a white world and you have to be an act white. And they would, like, you know, comb my hair, iron my hair, and scrub me if I got too dark. And I never understood that. And then when he died, I found out that, you know, I have Native American in me, Ute and Maidu, and Aztec and Spanish. And I felt like a bird out of water, because I was like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. But I kind of understood the culture and, you know, that what was happening at that time. Because, you know, in Native country, you know, incest is a given. Mm-hmm. You know, the violence is just being perpetuated over and over, and really needing to look at that. And it's hard. But what I was able to do is realize that in all that pain and in all that dysfunction, my parents, even if it was like itty bitty teeny weeny speckle, they shared something that gave me the opportunity to be taught me how to love. Mm-hmm. Even though I had to kind of adjust what that meant. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were able to give something, so even the most broken have something to offer. And so you know, I admire, and you know, when you were talking about this, I was thinking that I don't know history, because I wasn't in school, I didn't do that really well, but I just think about the women that first stood up and said no, the women that got us our rights to vote, mm-hmm. the women, and all these women that have done great things. And I think, you know what, because of your courage, I get to walk on that road you created for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I was listening to something, and it was like, as I'm trying to learn stuff, and they were talking about inventions and who all these inventors are, and I was like, why are they just talking about men? Women must have invented something. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, we still are afraid of the power of women. Mm-hmm. And we just need to help people realize that don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Mm-hmm. And we can all enjoy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
definitely,
that would be my statement. Mm.
Grace, how about you? Can you tell us about a woman in your life?
Mm. My women's studies professor, Amy Gregg. Amazing woman. I feel like that was the aha moment when I said, oh my goodness, all these things, all these systems in my life mm-hmm. that shaped me, who I am today, mm. make me anxious, make me upset and depressed. Mm. I don't have to live with that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't. I can leave it at the door. And it was just the most beautiful, amazing moment. And then my other mentor, Dr. Brown.
So wonderful. Such a release.
Who taught women's health in the psychology department mm-hmm. and just totally kicked ass. She's amazing. So just want to give a shout out to her as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we take a quick break and listen to some music, and then we'll come back and talk about your organizations.
Great.
Okay. Game face. Here we go. I've got bipolar disorder. My shit's not in order. I'm overweight. I'm always late. I've got too many things to say. I rock mom jeans, cat earrings, extrapolate my feelings. My family is dysfunctional, but we have a good time killing each other. They tell us from the time we're young to hide the things that we don't like about ourselves. Inside ourselves. I know I'm not the only one who spent so long attempting to be someone else. Well, I'm over it. Sometimes I cry a whole day. I care a lot. Use an analog clock and never know when to stop. And I'm passive aggressive. I'm scared of the dark and the dentist. I love my butt and won't shut up. And I never really grew up. They tell us from the time we're young to hide the things that we don't like about ourselves, inside ourselves. I know I'm not the only who spent so long attempting to be someone else. Well, I'm over it.
We are in the studio with Rocky and Alicia. This is It's Your Body. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio from the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. That was Secrets by Mary Lambert, another amazing woman. The whole discography is just, it's another crier, speaking of crying.
I love that. Six Hanky?
It's a Six Hanky.
Love it. Yeah, love it.
So let's talk about the organizations you belong to. So whoever wants to start, just give us the rundown on what you guys do.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I went to George Washington University and did not have a great time in college until I found the Feminist Majority Leadership Alliance, and I found my niche. So when I got to Butte College, I looked for that same type of organization to get involved, to find that safe space with like-minded people based on feminist values and beliefs, and they didn't have one. So I said, well, I'll start one. And so that's what I did. It was back in 2013. Back in, that was only 3 years ago. myself, along with my co-advisor, Lauren Wilson, we put it together, we did the tabling and recruitment, and it's now a full-fledged club doing events on campus. As Grace mm-hmm. mentioned, we hosted the Vagina Monologues this past February as part of the V-Day initiative. And other than that, we've done things like a pay equity bake sale where we try to show people that there still is a wage gap by offering, you know, baked goods, and we charge women 75 cents and men a dollar to get that conversation mm-hmm. going on what's going on with wage inequality in the United States. And we raised $220 and gave that to Torres Community Shelter in the form of pads and tampons and sanitary products for homeless women that were staying there. So we're doing those types of things, feminist movie nights, feminist poetry slam, trying to get, you know, the word out that we're on campus, we're active, we're focused on education and activism, networking with like-minded individuals, and creating that safe space for students who just need a place to talk about these issues with people who won't maybe judge them right off the bat, where they can go for some advice as well if they need it. And so that's the Butte Feminist Union.
Awesome. I love it. It makes me want to re-enroll.
Oh, thanks.
I'm already in school. I can't do that twice. Rocky.
Rape crisis. You know, something we've been around for 42 years, and in the beginning we were a dual agency. So we did both domestic violence and sexual violence, and we took care of five counties, Colusa, Palumas, Butte, Glen, and Tehama. And then in like 78 or so, a group of women approached us, and they said, you know, we'd like to write a grant, you know, to take care of the domestic violence. And that was the inception of Catalyst. And we were like, that's great. And our director at the time, I could, you know, it was like at that time in history, we were getting $100 a month for domestic violence because there was no money. This is all pre-OJ. So, you know, and it was, and the more, and then we continued to do domestic violence in Glen County until like the 90s, and then Catalyst then absorbed Glen County. And so it was a great partnership because it was like, you're the experts in DV, we're the experts in SV. And then probably by 90, we then only took care of Butte, Glen, and Tehama, so that's almost 6,000 square miles, and we're the only state-certified sexual assault counselors, and the importance of that is because we're not therapists, we had to find a way to protect the people that were talking to us so that they would not, that we could hold confidential mm-hmm. privilege for them. And so the way that was done is only rape crisis centers have a certified training, and that meets the penal code. And then once that's certified and we go through that and it's successful, then we meet the evidential code part, which means that we become sexual assault counselors. And that's how we're able to hold privilege. And so anyone that wants that, it's like, and that's important because we know that it's not strangers mm-hmm. that are doing the crimes. It's people that know. And so it gives people time to think. And so we always want people to know that, you know, we are your confidential mm-hmm. resource. And we're real, and we're here.
That's awesome. So when was it founded?
It was founded, that's another proud factor, 1974. And it was founded, that's when we got our incorporation. So it was founded just a bit before that. But what I like to share with people is that rape crisis started, like many rape crisis centers in the nation, there were four university women from Chico State. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that had the courage to say, enough is enough, we need something. Mm-hmm. And they started our organization in their garage with no money and just the passion to be a resource, and told law enforcement, if this happens, please. And I think that's important for people to know that, for me, it's like women were just getting ready to go to college and they were able to do that. And so it was like, why not bring these issues up? Mm-hmm. And so that's our foundation, those brave women. And so that was pretty powerful, you know, for them to do that. And we've been around for 42 years.
Mm. Wow. Wow. And a year later, women's health specialists arrived.
Yeah. Okay.
Same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. Also founded grassroots movement by women.
Right.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked a little bit about counseling services. Do you provide any other services?
Sure. So the number for everyone to remember is the same area code, 530-342-RAPE. Which is 7273, but it's a collect calls. And what I like people to know about the crisis line is that, guess what? You don't have to be in crisis to call it. Mm. You can call because maybe you just have a question, or you're having a disagreement with somebody about this issue, or, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we were debating what rape really is, or whatever it is, or we get a lot of, I'm a friend of a friend. So we answer, because a lot of things, they describe these situations, and then we have the unfortunateness of having to explain to them that it meets the legal definition of rape or whatever it is in California. And so then on that 24-hour crisis line, what I want people to understand is it's men and women mm-hmm. that are all state certified. Therefore, they all hold confidentiality. No one will ever know your story unless you choose to. And that you will go through an answering service, and hopefully you'll get the right music and the right whatever. But they will ask stupid question at one point, and it's because they're the operators of the answering service, and they'll say, would you like to speak to a counselor? When you're in crisis, you don't want to hear that, but that's just the system that we have, because that's what the state requires. We have to answer within 10 minutes. So the person that you first call on the crisis line is not privileged. They do not hold confidentiality. They are the operator, but you can just say yes. And if they can ask you your name, and you can give it, or you don't have to give it. If you're not comfortable, if it's one of our male sexual assault counselors, you can ask for a female. Mm-hmm. For all our volunteers and interns, we always have backup staff. So staff, like right now I'm on backup for a week, for the full 24 hours. So I back up the volunteers for a second call. On those calls, when people tell us what's happened, then we ask them after they've explained it. We say, so if they say, you know, I was raped and this just happened, we'll say, so what do you want to see happen? Mm-hmm. Because it's all about their choice. And then from that, then we give them options so we can advocate or accompany it to the forensic medical exams. When we're talking about forensic medical exams, there's, I hate to say that, I have to keep saying it's a new law, but it was in 2005 that, the Congress reenacted the Victim of Violence Against Women's Act, and every person that is sexually violated has the right to a free forensic medical exam, whether they choose to deal with the criminal justice system or not. Mm-hmm. So that's important for people to know. And then we can advocate for law enforcement, courts, counseling, support group, education, tabling, plays, shows. We'll go anywhere.
It's a wide array of services.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty encompassing, and it is a huge issue, especially in this community.
Mm-hmm. In all communities.
Yeah.
In the world.
Unfortunately, yes.
In the world.
Makes me sick. So what is your mission at Rape Crisis?
To educate. Mm. To eradicate. Mm. You know, we're kind of a society that we wait till several people get killed at a street corner before we put in a stop sign. Mm-hmm. And people are afraid to give money into prevention, and it's kind of like they don't realize how much that could stop. And you know, I someone asked me one time why I would want to work with child abuse, and I said, you know, I would do it every day because, and I listen to little 3-year-olds telling me what happened to them, because I want us to stop building prisons. That's what ends up. You know, many of these people that are incarcerated, if you really dig deep, regardless of what they've done, they were someone that was oftentimes sexually violated and just never knew that that impacted how they viewed the world. Mm-hmm. But when that happens to you, then the world becomes unsafe, and you learn a really terrible thing, and that's that people who love you are supposed to hurt you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we try really hard to make people realize that this is an issue that's ongoing, that we can never do enough prevention. We have to stop the shame. You know, I'm always educating that until O.J. Simpson was on TV for 134 days, people didn't know there was domestic violence. And I was like, see, it proves there's aliens. Because mm-hmm. where in the heck have you been? We're a violent species, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But that was the catalyst for things to happen. Anita Hill, that was the catalyst mm-hmm. for sexual harassment. And I'm thinking, wasn't that law like in the 60s? So there really wasn't anything. And I remember when I saw Obama get elected, and I just thought, maybe he'll be the father that will do something for his daughters. And so he's really been, he was the first president that ever signed the Sexual Assault Awareness mm-hmm. Month proclamation. Mm-hmm. Things have been happening, you know, and so it's amazing. And Senator Biden, you know, mm-hmm. so that's our mission, is just, if we really are talking about that we want safe communities and we want our children to be healthy, mm-hmm. then we need to get out of the closet yeah. and we need to say it out loud that we're not okay with what's happening. It needs to stop. So our mission's huge.
Yeah, and it will never stop.
So I'm glad you guys are going to help me with the mission. I'm all excited.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah.
So we are running out of time today, but I wanted to talk about some upcoming events. It's if you guys want to talk about what's going on within the next 4 months.
Well, we are putting together, myself and the Butte Feminist Union, and then some people from the community, we are trying to put together a local version of the Vagina Monologues, a celebration of women in the community, probably in the planning phases now. We're hoping to have it be in the spring of 2017. And working title is the acronym See You Next Tuesday. You can write that down. You'll know what word I'm talking about that I can't say on the radio. But if you're interested in helping us out with that, you can email me at my Butte email address. It's TRIDERAL@butte.edu. BUTTE.edu.
I'm always putting a shout out. Come, my little Donna Monos. We need you. So we're going to have a training in July. And I don't have a calendar, but it's 4th of July. So then it would be the 5th of July. That's the date that it would start. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to look real quick here for a calendar. So it will be from July 5th through July 30th. And so the training dates are Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 10 and Saturdays from 9 to 5. We're going to be having it at our new drop-in center downtown. You do need to call us because we do pre-interviews. There is a 9-month commitment. There is a $150 charge. And you can get all that information. We need more people to do the work. The other thing, and internships, you can get internships that way. The other thing that we're doing is we're going to start our third annual fundraiser earlier than I've been doing it. We're going to give us 10 months in running. So April 2nd, we're going to have a community meeting. Anyone in the community that wants to help raise money to teach child abuse prevention, to stop, you know, to get the word out about sexual violence, that would be great. And it'll be at our office, the other office. But anyone can reach me by my email. It's all lowercase, Rocky, R-O-C-K-Y, .cruz at rapecrisis.org. That's rapecrisis.org.
Fantastic. And if anyone has any particular strengths in fundraising or just wants to get out there in the community, give her an email and show up.
Because I know nothing. I need help.
I don't buy it for a second. Well, this has been It's Your Body. We're going to end the show with some music, but first, our underwriters. It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Formal Education. Voted Best of Chico for 2015, Formal Education provides everything for the well-appointed man, from casual to formal. You'll find designer and top brand clothing, accessories, and personal products, too, at 334 Broadway in downtown Chico. More information by calling 809-1839 or at formaleducation.com. Allow Formal Education to educate you. And by ID International, a design and web agency celebrating their new office location in Camellia Courtyard next to Morning Thunder and the Tea Bar. For questions about your company's logo, graphic design, or website, you can contact ID International at 892-9027 and at identity-international.com. So I just want to thank you amazing ladies for coming on the show tonight. It has been a true honor and a privilege to talk with you.
Grace, it's been my honor to talk with you, so thank you
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alicia. Thanks, Rocky. We're going to end the show with She Keeps Me Warm by Mary Lambert.
She says I smell like safety and home. I named both of her eyes forever and please don't go. I could be your morning sunrise all the time, yeah. This could be good, this could be good. I can't change, even if I try, even if I wanted to. And I can't change, even if I try, even if I wanted to. My love, my love, my love, my love, she keeps me warm. Keeps me warm. What's your middle name? Do you hate your job? Do you fall in love too easily? What's your favorite word? Do you like kissing girls? Can I call you baby? Yeah, look so good together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't change, even if I try, even if I wanted to. I can't change, even if me warm, she keeps me warm, she keeps me warm.
Baseball bat.
To the peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.